Part of my instincts tell me we should end it right here. That was beautiful. We have some talented people in this congregation, very talented. Our kids, Mari, Frank, Jim, great job. Fred, well done. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the days of trouble come and the years approach, when you will say, I find no pleasure in them. Ecclesiastes, the wise King Solomon writes. But he also writes, meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher, everything is meaningless. Vanity, useless, pointless. This book always grabs my attention. And I recall when I was a young man in college, I was part of a study group where Orville Vaughn, I still remember the man's name, led a discussion about Ecclesiastes, and it really has impacted my life. I would recommend to you, Mari and Frank, this book called, I think you still read books, maybe it's all online now, Living on the Ragged Edge, Finding Joy in a World Gone Mad by Charles Swindoll. It is on Ecclesiastes, and it's a good, non-threatening way to dig into the Bible. And it made a big impact on me when I was going through and asking some of these same questions that Solomon has asked in Ecclesiastes. Meaningless. Everything? Is everything really meaningless? I want to talk about two people with the short time we have left. Solomon, who you know, and Viktor Frankl, who you may not know. Solomon was a builder. He pursued wisdom. He prayed for wisdom, and God gave him wisdom. He built the temple, 7 years it took. He built a royal palace, 13 years. He fortified the city of Jerusalem, built the walls larger, and had great towers. He built 6 cities. He built many ships for trading with other countries. It's recorded that he would send his ships to India for gold. He wrote Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Song of Solomon. In total, he composed 1,005 books, 3,000 parables. His wisdom exceeded everybody before him, including the Egyptians. People would come from countries to come see Solomon, come see the things that he had built, bring riddles to him to be solved. Solomon was famous. Solomon is powerful. He's a king. Solomon married Pharaoh's daughter. In fact, he married a lot of royalty. 700 wives from royal birth. 700. That was not enough. 300 just women of common birth. 1,000 wives. Something went wrong on Solomon's journey. The wisdom did not serve him well in this way. He grew mad in love with women. He laid no restraint on himself and his lusts, nor was he satisfied with women of his country alone, but he married wives of foreign nations. He also began to worship gods, which he did in order to gratify his wives out of affection for them. So Solomon writes in many places, this life is meaningless. I strived after wisdom, meaningless. Self-indulgence, meaningless. I lived wisely, vanity. I worked, I built, meaningless. I accumulated wealth and honor. People come to see me all over the world, meaningless. Why was it meaningless? In fact, he says in Ecclesiastes 2:17, "So I hated life, because what I had done under the sun was grievous to me, for all is vanity and striving after wind." How can a person with this much wealth and wisdom come to this conclusion? It fascinated me 30-some years ago, and it still does today. How is this possible? He would say, "The righteous die young, the wicked live long. The righteous are punished and the wicked are rewarded." How come? How does this happen? There's the famous passage in Ecclesiastes 3. There's a time for everything. There's been a song, maybe more, written about this. We are ruled by the clock, aren't we? For sure we are. You're going to have a class schedule. You better be there. Between birth and death, there's morning and night. There's start and stop. There are seasons. There are schedules. Work days, weekends, holidays, birthdays, and wedding days. And anniversaries. Had one last week. So we are ruled by the clock, and there is, as the wise Solomon said, if you look at this earth and what happens in it, there's a time to kill, a time to heal, to break and build, to weep and laugh, mourn and dance, shatter and gather, embrace and refrain, search and give up, keep and discard, tear and mend, time to be silent, time to speak, time to love, time to hate, time for war, and time for peace. This list doesn't mean it's a license to intentionally go out and do these things. But if you look at our world, nothing has changed. From Solomon's time to our time, all these things happen. They happen. Viktor Frankl. Viktor was a world-renowned psychiatrist. He founded the theory of logotherapy, which means or teaches that the central human motivation is the search for meaning. So in 1930, he earned his MD. He went on to do some teaching at a school. At a hospital. He started his own practice, and then World War II broke out. Frankl was not only an Austrian, but he was a Jew. His whole family got caught up in the concentration camps. He lost his father and mother, his brother, his wife. And being a Holocaust survivor, he wrote 39 books. He went back to school and got a PhD. So we have Solomon, who had all the power in the world, and we have a man that was educated but became nothing. In the concentration camps, you're stripped of everything, every bit of human dignity. One thing that, and there's a lot here I could read, but for the sake of time, he said prisoners would go through this cycle where first you would, didn't care about your life anymore, about human life. It just didn't matter. And then you would get to this point of numbness where you were apathetic toward anything. Somebody could be beaten next to you and it just didn't bother you anymore. He said some prisoners would try to end the suffering by electrification on the security fence. Terrible, terrible conditions. But he said the unique task of a prisoner is to accept their suffering. In some way, suffering ceases to be suffering when we find meaning. And he goes on to explain how you find meaning. But that is for each individual. And he said the strongest thing is love. The two things that kept him alive was the love of his young bride and that he wanted to finish a book that he started. Those are the two things when everything was terrible. He talked about hunger that never went away. Hunger never went away. Underclothed. Terrible conditions, unimaginable human suffering. He was able to find meaning in that. Solomon was able to find meaning as well in all the indulgence that he undertook. He found meaning. So that's where I want to end. And what is this meaning? It's looking above the sun. It's acknowledging that we have been created for a purpose. We have a soul. We are more than physical. We're reminded of this in Ephesians when Paul writes, "For it is by grace you have been saved through faith. This is not from yourselves. It is a gift from God, not by works, so that no one can boast. But we are God's workmanship, created in Christ Jesus to do good things." Our purpose is to acknowledge God because He's given us a spirit. Once we acknowledge God in our position relative to God, that He is the creator and we are the created, then we can have a relationship. Then we can find meaning, whether we are suffering, as Viktor Frankl did, or whether we are the king. A few notes. When I was going through Ecclesiastes, our ability to recognize good is a gift from God. So all of you, make that a challenge. Recognize good. That is a gift from God. Be spiritual. Don't be afraid to be spiritual in a physical world. I want to leave you with a few things that Viktor Frankl said. He writes after his ordeal, "The ultimate meaning of life can be found by being responsible for one's actions, to fulfill one's task, to seek opportunities to better oneself. Our answer to meaning of life does not consist of talk and meditation." Remember, this is a guy that has he's a medical doctor and a PhD. He says, life is not about talk and meditation, but in right action and right conduct. In the quest for meaning, Frankl saw three sources. In work, doing something significant. Find something significant to do in your life. In love, caring for another person. In courage during difficult times. Frankl recalled, "My mind still clung to the image of my wife. I didn't even know if she was alive. I knew only one thing, which I have learned well by now. Love goes far beyond the physical person in whom you love. It finds its deepest meaning in the spiritual being, in the inner self. Whether or not she's actually present, whether or not she was still alive at all, it ceased to be important to me. Doesn't that describe the Spirit of God right there? Isn't that the Spirit of God? We can't physically touch him, but we are created in his image with a soul. Solomon concludes and says, "Fear God and keep his commandments." Fear is a complex word. It really is. And this is what I, truly, this is it. I have thought long and hard about fear. And in the Bible, the Hebrew word doesn't easily translate into a meaning that I think has the full meaning. I think you can both be terrified and compelled and attracted at the same time. I think that's perfectly possible. So when the Bible talks about fear, it talks about both a physical and a spiritual response. Consider this. Consider you're at the edge of the Grand Canyon. Your tippy toes are just hanging over the edge. You know that one misstep and it's going to be a bad day. Maybe you're afraid of heights and you're just sweating. Your knees are starting to buckle. At the same time, you see the beauty of the Grand Canyon, the majesty. You can behold both of those things in your mind at the same time. Consider the ocean, how powerful it is and uncontrollable. Yet if they drop me 50 yards out, I don't think I'm making it. Consider the attribute of God. How he is both merciful and just. He forgives with loving kindness for 1,000 generations, yet punishing the guilty to the third and fourth generation. The very character of God is one of mercy, love, and justice. So when I think of the word fear, I don't think of just one thing. Yes, it's about respect, reverence. But it's also, as the writer says, you should fear the one that can condemn both the body and the soul. So with that, I'm going to leave the lesson to you. And remember, as Solomon said, the whole duty of man is to fear God and keep his commandments.